Dear Shooter, today's scary word of the day, tariffs. While you might be thinking only the market moguls are in extreme fear mode, they may soon be affecting your ammo supply. On a happier note, Congress is asking the question, why does the IRS need guns? But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an effing shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made that
clip
weird.
On, it's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
I guess that means it's Thursday, and if you're listening to us today, we are currently in Atlanta for NRA national meetings.
That's correct.
And if you're going to be there, come find us.
We'll be around.
We'll be around. I'll have some swag and maybe some goodies to pass out if you come and find me.
Yeah. But Lucid Optics will have some in their bag as well.
But, you know, there might be a quiz, so...
There's always a quiz at the NRA. You better be able to recite it.
Yeah, yeah. What is it? What's the quiz? What are we testing on?
Well, you don't get swag unless you can recite the Second Amendment.
Okay, fair enough.
That's what we're there for, right?
Yeah.
I think you ought to do that at the board, too. You can't have your seat unless you can recite the Second Amendment.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah. No, and I'll make somebody a deal. If somebody comes up to me and signs up for a class on the spot, I will get you a discount code for ammo.
Ooh. Gun food.
Yes. I can do that.
Nice.
So yeah, if you guys are in Atlanta at the NRA show, find us. We'll be around. I have no idea what the schedule is going to be. I think I have one thing that's like locked in for Saturday. Other than that, it's going to be trying to go and visit sponsors and.
You see, on the other hand, I know exactly what my schedule is going
to
be like.
You're scheduled to the hilt now.
Yeah, there's not much free time to actually go and have old home week down on the industry floor.
No.
I'll find time. I'll come see you all, but my schedule is full.
And hopefully we see some good changes. Now, I know there's a special election going on while we're there.
Yes, there's a couple of seats that... either were vacated between the elections and now, and there's always one that is the 76th board member that's a one-year term that will be taking a new seat.
Okay. Well, good. So, yeah, come find us. So, tariffs. I mean, it has been – that's all you hear about in the news lately.
Well, hearing about it in the news frustrates the crap out of me.
Oh, me too.
Because half the people know half as much as they should about what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Half the folks, and this is including the press secretary for the White House, have got it wrong.
No, right?
Tariffs on import goods are a tax on the brands and folks that bring those goods in to sell them in this country. Mm-hmm. It's a straight-up tax on those businesses. Now, it's a leverage tool from the international side because if the tariffs are too steep, I'm going to stop buying those goods and bringing them into the country.
Right.
Because at some point, it becomes more equitable to build a new facility and stuff here, make it here. with the global supply chain, what I do, that's really not feasible for a pretty steep tariff.
Right.
But it will see price increases and shortages because supply chains are going to really weigh carefully bringing it in because their margins are being affected right out of the gate mm-hmm. by a tax. Tariff is a tax on the folks here in the country that are trying to bring it in and sell it to you. Right? It's not a tax on China. It's not a tax on Mexico. It's not a tax on Canada. It's a tax on the American brands here mm-hmm. that are trying to bring it into the country.
Right.
Now, from the other side, economically, if enough folks stop, like we saw when the tariffs got to be 140% on top of what they currently are, which effectively made, for a lot of things in my business, 160% tariffs, right? When it's double the mm-hmm. cost of the item to bring it in, I say hold on to it for a second.
Right.
Tariffs are a temporary thing. They're always going to come and go and ebb and flow with the political environment. So understanding it before we get all wrapped up into fear is a really important thing.
Right. And I think people need to understand the whole goal of what they're trying to do with the tariffs, and that is to get to free trade. You know, we love him or hate him, Trump is right that the United States economy has been getting absolutely screwed on tariffs because we import all these goods from other countries, but when we try and export and sell those same goods that we manufacture here in those countries, they get hit with such high tariffs that we can't compete. Germany is a great example. You know, you bring in, if you look at, we sell to Germany, it's like $8.6 million a year in automobiles to Germany. But when you've got a high tariff plus their VAT tax, their value-added tax, it makes the cost of that vehicle 30% more to the consumer. Now, on the flip side of that, our tax on German vehicles is like 2.5%. They sell somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 billion in vehicles here in the U.S.
That's right.
That's not fair.
It's not fair. And when we talk about tariffs, it is an economic lever to get the trade routes to be fair, balanced. And you talk about free trade. We're probably never going to see free trade without some other things like a third world country because they need it.
Right, but let's make it fair and equitable to both countries.
If you look at what we're sending in volume and what we get our products taxed as, which diminishes the demand, mm-hmm. the critical piece in that whole business side of things of supply, demand, right? Mm-hmm. It diminishes the demand because it makes it too expensive, and it promotes their local automaker in their own country, which I totally understand and I
right,
get it.
Right.
However, with the largest consumer nation on the planet, it wouldn't hurt them one little iota to be a little bit more fair in how they balance that out.
Exactly, because and then you start throwing the tariff imbalance with the trade imbalance.
Correct.
And that's where we really start getting screwed. So at the end of the day, we're trying to get to a fair playing field for everybody, or at least for the United States. I mean, we've been getting hosed for 60 years.
Well, and there's lots of other factors when you start looking at what tariff conversations begin to open up. When you start looking at the EU, they were leveraging tariffs in the neighborhood of 100% in the wake of Trump saying, no, we're going to be fair.
Right.
And that reaction then put the knee-jerk reaction back into the U.S. and said, you know what? We'll pull out of NATO and we'll stop being the policeman. Good luck.
Right. And because of all of these, they're all geopolitical factors that
come
into play. And I think eventually, you know, anyway, we've already got, what, like 130 countries that are lining up to negotiate.
Every single country that we trade with came to the table within 48 hours and said, okay, let's talk.
Right.
Except China.
Well, and China's doing what China does.
Yep,
they're saber-rattling, they're making threats. But if you look at what's going on over there, their factories are quiet because all of the orders from all of these companies that order things from China, Amazon being one of the big ones, you told me what was $120 billion in merchandise that they sent back.
They canceled the orders, and if it was on the water, they sent it back.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't accept it.
And that was that in one day. So China lost $120 billion.
Yeah, and well, and you start killing your forecast like that, the factories can't continue to produce.
Right.
And so that'll shut the whole industrial engine down.
Mm-hmm.
And so the countries are going to have to talk at some point. Otherwise, the Chinese will have a revolt on their hands.
Yeah. I mean, we know how the Chinese handle that.
I don't know. You get 2 billion angry Chinamen, and yeah, you might not have enough bolitos to go around.
That is true. They're going to need a lot more gas. So how does this trickle down to ammo? Now, we know that pretty much the U.S. really does not produce any components that go into ammunition.
Not like we used to. And if we do have a component, it is not in enough volume to be considered a mainstream discussion.
Right.
Was it nitrocellulose? And then there's a hardening agent.
Yeah, the antimony that we get.
Antimony that we actually get from China.
China, and then...
And Turkey is a player. In some instances, we actually ship our copper ore over to Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And Turkey processes it and sends us back bullets.
Right.
So in that regard, we could do that here. It's just expensive.
Mm-hmm.
With the trade deficit and then the tariff discussion, we may end up doing that more here now. But in the short term, we're looking at shortages. We're looking at high prices, in some cases triple.
Well, and that's assuming that we don't make a deal. I think what the bigger factor that's going to happen is you're going to get the panic buying.
Well, the thing about ammunition, we all have to understand, there is a 5-week supply at any given spot in the warehouses.
So it's like a grocery store.
It's very much like a grocery store. It's like on-demand delivery as far as components and finished product. So if we don't have the discussions and have it fixed within a 5 or 6 week time frame, yeah, there's going to be a shortage.
I'm not sure. I think it would happen faster than that. I think if panic buying started, shelves would be empty in a week.
Yep, and distribution can refill one time.
Yeah. So I think that's the bigger concern. The other concern is... We talked about this earlier. Like, we have a shortage of powder. You know, reloaders. Go try and find your favorite powder. It's tough.
It can be real tough.
You
look for Rotumbo lately?
I think I've seen it once in the last 2 years.
Yeah. And it got gobbled up because they reintroduced a 300 Norma for a military contract on a cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
And what's it use?
It's using Rotumbo.
So they bought it all.
Mm-hmm. There was another one. What was it? Tight Group?
Mm-hmm. Tight Group. Yep.
You know, and then what was Hodgson had one of their powder facilities blow up.
Yeah, and we had a primer facility in Nebraska go up
yep.
a couple of years ago. These kinds of things really damage the U.S. supply ability.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been buying it from foreign sources to get it through with kind of hit-and-miss quality control standards.
It has been. I was talking to... the Tawassans over, and they were telling me that they were trying to source primers from Argentina, but the quality was, you know, 40-50% failure rates on these.
That's a lot.
It was horrible. But it's like, where else do you go? So ammo is going to be kind of sketchy for a while.
I think the potential for it to be a real problem is here. And nobody knows this better than the retailers. I was talking to one today, and he was flat-out concerned about his NATO cartridges.
Yeah.
He usually sees them in bulk offerings, and people haven't been buying in bulk because the economy's not been so good, but the bulk offerings are disappearing. He can buy boxed ammo all the time, but it's 3 times the cost.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned around this morning and got an update. And it was 5 times the cost.
Yikes.
And they're stripping them out of the bulk stuff to put it in the packages for the retail guy. So when they start playing those shenanigans with NATO cartridges, you know it's coming.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's not something that's new to us. I mean, look at the run on ammo. I go back to 2013. You couldn't find ammo. And then again in what, 2020? When yeah. COVID kicked off, I mean, you couldn't find it. So, I mean, we have survived these things before. We will survive this. But even in the last, well, God, what, probably 8 years? Try finding large rifle primers.
It's very challenging. If you want to find them for under $15 a hundred.
You can't.
Think about that.
You can't.
I was going through my cabinet today, and I ran across a tin, and it still had primers in it, which was weird. And it had a $3 price tag on it.
Oh, yeah. I have a few of those.
That's what we were 4 years ago. That's retarded kind of inflation.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, and the only way I've found around it, and it's tough because I do have some semi-autos that are running the large rifle primers, so I can't use the match primers because they're too soft. It makes me too nervous to run them in a semi-auto. But the only way I've been able to get around it for my bolt guns is to go with the match primers, and they're $350 for 1,000.
Well, a funny story. You talk about them being soft, and first time I loaded for an AR-10. I called around and got the recipes from my buddies that know, and I loaded bench rest primers in my new 100 rounds of AR-10 feed. I slapped a magazine into the, at the range, and as soon as that bolt went forward, I had to hold on to that gun because I had a cook-off. So, in a gas gun, y'all, that's not necessarily a good idea. Because it ran like a sewing machine, but it wasn't me running it.
So how long did that mag dump last?
All
3 seconds?
20 rounds.
Yeah, and what, 3 seconds?
If it was that. One, I was shocked. And so it seemed to happen in a blink of an eye in an instant. But all the details of the brass flying out, because I was absolutely in horror, seemed to fly in slow motion for some reason. Yeah, don't do that.
So, here's maybe a silver lining. If we start seeing massive ammo shortages, one of the things I'm trying to get my hands on is one of the new force reset triggers. I'll bet the price comes down because nobody's going to want to shoot that kind of ammo quantity.
It gets expensive real quick when it starts to disappear out of the magazine at that kind of rate. I don't know. I want to play with one of those triggers. Don't get me wrong. I haven't done it yet. But I'm going to maybe do it with your ammo, not mine.
No, like I have any. I have to keep a stash because my students will call me up. Oh, I was only able to find 300 rounds. Okay, we'll figure it out.
That's going to be a thing now.
It will be, and instructors, we're going to have to probably revamp our classes a little bit so that we're not shooting as much ammo just because people can't get it. And again, we've done this before. I'm a huge fan of, if you want to keep training, the Manis systems, the CERT pistols. You can do an awful lot with those.
I'm just envisioning us having a guy at a range sometime. He's standing on the line yelling, bang, 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 bang.
We've done that.
Just going through the motions because he doesn't have ammo. That's coming.
Guys in full tack gear with a metal cup will work for ammo.
I'd probably give him some money. Yeah. As long as he's honest about it.
Right? So, I mean, what's your prediction on it? I mean, do we make it through this? Is this all fear-mongering?
We're Americans. Fear-mongering is a religion, and we will make it through.
Well, yeah.
It's what we do. If you're like me, you take any of that spare budget you may have left, and you invest in precious metals, and I'm talking about copper and brass.
Yeah.
Put it in the cabinet for that rainy day.
Yeah.
Because there will come a time where you can't go get it. And if you can go get it, it's not chambered in the caliber you have. Because we saw that during COVID. NATO cartridges disappeared, and all the boutique cartridges were available. You couldn't buy a 308, but you could buy a 6 Creed. It's just the way it works.
Right.
So put some in the cabinet, but we're going to make it through this.
I'll tell you one thing, though. I would say, not to throw it into the NATO calibers, but the common calibers, I would say 6.5 Creedmoor fits into that spot.
It does now. It didn't used to, but it does now.
I see more guys shooting 6.5 Creedmoor than probably any other hunting cartridge.
I know a lot of guys that are hunting with it now too. So it's become a very popular sporting cartridge for sure.
I think it's right in there with that, with your 308s, your 30-06, your 7mm magnums. I mean, it's right there.
I'll be cool on 7mm 08. Nobody shoots that but me.
No, I know. To the point I have to load it myself because you can't buy it.
Not reliably, no. I mean, you can't always find it.
But I found some at High Country, some dust on it.
It probably had the old price tag, too, so you might want to consider shopping the old shirt.
It'd be at least brass anyway, right?
Yeah, we got plenty. And as often as you have to shoot that rifle, I mean, you shoot it, what, 5 or 6 times a year, depending on how many tags you have, because it's one shot per animal, and maybe 3 at the beginning just to make sure you're still zeroed.
Oh, you got to blow the cobwebs out.
Right.
And she does exactly that. She'll shoot 3 at the range for good measure and then kill whatever she shoots with one shot, and then she puts the gun away.
Mm-hmm. No, I loaded.
That's a hunting gun. That's what it's for.
I loaded you 200 rounds next year, and my expectation is that you'll never go through it.
I'm going to have to get more tags.
You're inviting that killing problem she has.
Well, now I'm in a situation where I have the space to put in another freezer.
Yeah, as I hear rumors, this one will be walk-in.
Well, hopefully. Swear to God. That has just been, every time I think I might be able to get my hands on one, somebody somehow pulls the rug out from under me.
It's the unicorn.
And it's stupid. It's one of those things where, and you get online, you try and, like, okay, what kind of a cost am I really looking at here? And, oh, my God, it's... Well, for pricing, send us an email.
Yeah, you can't even shop it. You got to have a conversation with a sales guy.
And that would be fine, but I'm not going to do this back and forth through email crap. Can I call? Just make a phone call.
So Google, you want CarMax for coolers?
I'm not sure that exists because I've done the same evolution he's done, and in 3 minutes I got frustrated and saw a shiny butterfly and did something else.
Well, because that's a man thing.
Yeah. But who's shopping for coolers? Are you?
No, because then they get all technical and crap.
Right. So it's not a female shopping thing. So they have got to cater to the guy that's shopping for it.
I'm surprised you haven't ordered one from Temu and it comes in like centimeters instead of feet.
Oh, I did that.
Yeah.
It came in as ice cube trays.
Yeah, you did. You tried to order me a cooler, and it turned out to be an ice maker.
That's right. That ain't going to help.
Well, let's check in with 10th Mountain, and we'll come back.
I love those guys.
And we have some potentially good news.
Beans, bullets, Band-Aids, and booze. While everyone forgets about the last one, 10th Mountain has you covered. With a range of whiskey, vodka, and cordials, you're sure to find just the right spirit for your next adventure. Just remember to flip up your nods before you take a sip. Now shipping orders to nearly every US state so you can get in on the awesomeness. Enter Deer Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
When it comes to your personal security, you want the best, and your training shouldn't be an exception. WyoTac is your one stop for all of your education and training needs, covering competitive, defensive, and hunting classes, as well as medical, fieldcraft, and survival courses. With over a decade of experience and with a network of resources, WyoTac can help to meet your goals. When no one is coming, you have to rely on yourself. Make sure you know what to do when the time comes. WyoTac. Empowerment through self-reliance.
And I'd remind everybody that training season is pretty much in full swing now. I think I have a class every weekend for the next 2 months.
Attaboy.
And they're filling up fast.
Good.
So here's something fun.
Oh no.
Republican Representative Barry Moore from Alabama. And this is actually being co-sponsored by our own Harriet Hageman.
All right.
It is called the Why Does the IRS Need Guns Act?
They finally cluing into that whole deal.
Yeah. And I think it boils down to I think Doge has a lot to do with this. According to the accounting, since 2006, the IRS has spent $35.2 million on guns, ammunition, and military-style equipment.
Yep.
And this is all, and a lot of this is coming from COVID money.
Yeah, don't you miscategorize that exemption on your taxes now.
Yeah, right. So, some of the expenditures, right? Smith & Wesson M&P 15 rifles, $474,000. An M&P rifle, they're about a $600 rifle. So do the math.
Yeah, they bought a bunch of them.
Beretta 1301 tactical shotguns, $463,000.
It's actually a nice shotgun.
Right. And don't forget, we had to hire the 87,000 new agents.
So, battlefield pickup.
Yeah.
Because they're not training these guys to use them.
Well, they
go to camp.
Yeah, we did. We talked about this.
But, oh, my gosh.
They're claiming $2.3 million in ammo.
Actually, that's not actually out of line. If you start looking at those firearms and a personal carry and a war chest of ammunition to resupply, that's not out of line.
Actually, it kind of is, because what the hell did they need guns for?
You talk about the word need, right? This is a Biden-era IRS thing. They wanted guns.
Oh, no, this was before Biden. I mean, we're talking since 2006. And $10 million between 2020 and 2021 to arm special agents with arrest powers.
So they're giving arrest powers to IRS agents.
Oh, it gets better. We talked about $2.3 million in ammo. $1.2 million for ballistic riot shields. I have never seen an IRS agent out there in riot gear. Where were they when Portland was on fire?
So were they planning on cross-training these folks for National Guard duty?
Hell no. What's
the deal here?
Hell no.
Yeah, they don't need that equipment.
No.
Well, they wouldn't need that much, because if they're, you know, doing National Guard duty, aren't they only on the weekends?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Unless you're deployed.
You have a good point.
Well, yeah, and you talk about that. So before 2020, the IRS had managed to stockpile 5 million rounds of ammunition, 4,500 firearms for its 2,159 special agents.
That seems disproportionate.
A little bit. Huh. I mean, that's you're basically 2.2 guns per agent.
Well, you know, they didn't clean them. If something doesn't go bang, they just toss it aside, grab another one.
Well, and it gets better. So you've got 621 pump action and semi-automatic shotguns, 539 semi-auto rifles. That's going to be your M&P 15s. 15 submachine guns. How much you want to bet those were HKs?
Oh.
The MP7s that we're not allowed to have.
That's interesting.
And why does the IRS need that?
I can't see a circumstance where...
Are they collecting taxes in Afghanistan?
I still can't see a circumstance, because they'd have an escort in detail that are Marines.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, and I think that's why this is good news.
But we're talking about this as it's a past tense action. So cat's out of the bag. They have the gear.
Right.
Now what?
Well, the Why Does the IRS Need Guns Act would force the IRS to relinquish possession of all of the agency's guns and ammunition to the General Service Administration. The GSA would then oversee the sale or auction of all firearms, minus the machine guns, to federal firearms licensees across the country, and all of the ammunition to the general public within 30 days.
Okay, so...
The bill would further prohibit the IRS from using appropriated funds to obtain or maintain any firearms or ammunition.
Okay. And I'm on board with the actions of what we're talking about here. But on the accounting side, the IRS doesn't need that extra revenue either. So what are they going to do with the money?
It would go into the general fund, because if this is going through the GSA, it would just go into the general fund.
We should put a pencil down and see what that looks like. That takes a bite out of our deficit.
Agreed. Add it to that. What you know? Where are we at? $500 billion that Doge has uncovered.
We're in the number now.
Yeah, we are, because they just did what 2.something trillion out of Medicare, right. Medicaid
of the waste.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely right. And that doesn't that actually puts more benefits in the pockets of folks who need it, because it's taking it out of the programs that were prohibiting it to get to where it needed to go.
Right.
So again, where is this money going?
Yeah, exactly right. General fund is what I'm hearing. If that's the case, that's straight to deficit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it and given who's currently running the government, I do think that that money would be appropriated properly. But then again, you got to jump through congressional hoops. The new law would apply to all departments of the IRS, including the agent's criminal investigation division.
Okay, so
now,
why does the IRS need a criminal investigations unit?
Well, I get it. It's probably some kind of a white-collar crimes division.
Again, but that's the FBI's job.
Right. Well, it, yeah, including the, okay, well, as I go on here, the Criminal Investigation Division, tasked with investigating financial crimes like money laundering, tax-related identity theft, and terrorism financing, would be consumed by the Department of Justice. So it would get kicked over to the FBI.
Correct.
Which should have always been there to begin with.
It should have been. That's their job, the FBI.
That whole department at the IRS goes away.
Pretty much. And all they are is a bunch of bean counters now.
So we're saving salaries now, too.
Uh-huh.
And benefits.
To the tune of at least 87,000 of them.
That's a big chunk. That's a lot.
Because, I mean, my guess is the average IRS agent is somewhere in the 70 to 80,000 a year category.
Yeah. Well, since the FBI is clearly going to start having less time for donuts and coffee, they're probably going to need a few more bodies.
Got 1,000 bodies from the ATF.
Yeah, and they're going to have a hell of a lot less time to go show up to PTA meetings and target parents who were pissed off about transgender education.
So they were more of a homeowners association than they were the FBI.
Yeah.
Jesus, Karen.
Well, they gave their jobs out to other agencies.
Yeah. Ah, jeez. There's a lot of questions that asking that one thing about guns opens up a lot more questions. And there's a chunk of revenue here that's just sitting doing absolutely nothing.
Well, and I love the fact that this stuff will actually be made publicly available.
Except for the
they're claiming there's only 15 submachine guns, but there's another bill going through the House right now that would gut the NFA to the point where I think that would be the next step, is to actually get machine guns where, yeah, they're probably going to require a tax stamp. They are going to be more expensive firearms, but we might actually be able to get them again.
That's all fine and good, but once again, from the previous topic, ammo is fun in a machine gun.
Yeah, you go through quite a bit.
That's why we refer to it as the giggle switch.
Right. Yeah. Giggle or tears, depending on who's paying for the ammo.
Well, yeah. Typically, if I'm shooting it, I'm paying for the ammo, but gosh darn it, it's fun.
I like the fact that when I shoot it, one of you all pay for the ammo, so it's way fun.
We need to audit your ammo expenditures these days and see where that's going. Holy crap.
So, this actually isn't the first time this bill's been introduced, but it did not make it to the House floor. With the current climate that we have in the House right now, they think that it might actually make it to the floor. The problem is when it goes to the Senate, because this is something that's going to require a supermajority, which we don't have.
Well, you start asking these common sense questions enough, though.
Are you saying that the Democrats would want to keep the guns?
Yeah, they'd want to keep the guns. And that's kind of the whole basis for this, right? The hypocrisy on this. How long has the government been trying to convince us that we don't need firearms to protect ourselves? But yet, look at what they do.
They've been straight up telling us who they are for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what they say, it's what they do.
Right. Well, before now, how hard was it to find that kind of information?
Oh, it was extremely hard to find that information.
You were having to give like FOIA requests.
Yeah, put yourself on serious risk to ask.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that freedom of speech thing was getting kind of pushed around there, too.
Well, and I was doing a lot of research into self-defense shootings, trying to find FBI statistics and other things just to... I was trying to back up theories that I was starting to come up with in training. And, I mean, okay, so... The one that it took me forever. It took me like a month of searching. I finally found it in Homeland Security statistics. But what I was trying to find was how many self-defense encounters that were actually a self-defense shooting did someone get shot in the hand?
Oh, yeah.
And it turned out to be like 87%.
Yeah, and in your drill, I fucked that up. I did that.
Yeah, and I started seeing that more and more and more and more and more. In almost every class, somebody will do it where, you know, we have this drill where you got multiple targets and there's things written on the targets and there's a command given and you have to figure out what it corresponds to. But it's always a high center chest shot.
But
inevitably somebody in the class would actually shoot what was written on the paper. And it kind of dawned on me. I'm like, huh, I wonder. And I know, I understand the psychology of it is because they view the object as the threat, not the person holding it.
Well, I ran this, and you were absolutely right. The drill has extreme validity in your mindset and target identification and reaction capabilities. You tell us. It's a center chest, center mass shot every time, right? But you yell out the word gun, and that substitutes for threat. I spin around, and I see the gun in the guy's hand, and what did I do?
Shoot the gun.
Every damn time.
Moron.
Well, but in my defense, though, I have managed the threat, because he can't shoot that gun because I screwed his hand up. But you're right. That is a psychological failure point under stress, and it happens to a lot of folks.
Well, and that's what I was trying to figure out. It was like, okay, and that was... in. Really, my basis behind this was, am I doing something wrong as an instructor, or is this a deeper psychological issue? So that's why I want to try and find statistical data on this. And what I found is, no, this is a psychological issue. People actually perceive the object as a threat. And I get it. I mean, when you're staring down the barrel of a 45, that thing looks like a cannon bore.
It does.
So yeah, you're going to focus on that, and that's probably what you're going to shoot. I mean, that's just, it's psychology. It's the way our brain works.
When you go under stress, tunnel vision's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And all your peripheral goes away, and it's like when you're threading a needle. It becomes the most important thing you're doing right now.
Well, I'm considering it kind of like, you know, if you shoot the hostage, there's no hostage. You shoot the gun, there's not much for the threat anymore.
And that's my comment on the whole thing, is I have managed the threat. I may have done it wrong for the drill, but in that circumstance, he's not shooting me or anybody else.
And his hand might hurt a little.
Now, I'm mad because he made me pull my heater out and go to work. I'm probably going to shoot him again.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, when we talk about multiple shots of the high center chest in training, we use the 3-5 model. And it's not just an arbitrary number that we throw out. It actually corresponds to a time frame. And we use that because realistically, you're probably going to manage the threat in 2 or 3 shots. But because you can't see, you know, in a fight, person's wearing clothes or whatever, you're probably not going to see that bullet strike. So what you have to look for is that change in behavior. And while you're firing, while you're working, and you finally recognize this change in behavior, you're probably still going to get off another 2 or 3 rounds before your brain actually tells you to stop shooting.
That anger blindness is real, y'all. I will guarantee you, by the time I actually recognize and accept that there's a change in behavior, I am in the process of a reload.
Right.
Maybe I don't have to let any more off the chain. Maybe I do. But I'm going to go until the gun's empty. And if you look statistically, everybody else does too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The statistics bear it out. And when you start talking about brain function, we talk about tachypsyche, bradypsyche, which is the distortion of perception of time when you're under extreme stress. People will, you know, in the aftermath, in their interviews, will be, I shot three times, four times maybe, but I was at slide lock. That's a common thing.
And you're running a Hellcat.
Yeah, that's 15 plus one.
There you go. So, you know? Yeah, I shot three or four times. I was at slide lock.
Right.
You know you emptied that gun.
And I've done it in training classes. You know, you start getting into some of the higher level advanced pistol type stuff, and you start getting under stress, and not only are you under cognitive stress, but now you're under time stress. Mm-hmm. You start throwing all that in, and enough artificial stress will mimic real stress. And yeah, I've done it where it's like I was supposed to shoot four times, but I dumped a mag.
Right.
And didn't really realize it. Like I knew I shot too many, but not that too many.
Right. So back to the IRS thing, the training that they were offering.
Oh my
God. When they first saw this happen, and they were bringing agents in and saying, okay, here is now your duty weapon. They were in a convention center in a hotel doing training. They were breaching a door, and they were going into a room, yelling bang a lot, because obviously they couldn't use live fire. They were going to get themselves killed if they ever had somebody return fire that had training.
Hence the machine guns. There's lead in the air.
There's a chance.
Even then, we had a guy here in town with a BB gun and a novelty sword hold a SWAT team at bay for 8 hours. There's a whole thing about, do I go in, do I not? Do I pull that trigger, do I not?
Right.
I'm surprised they waited that long to tear gas him out. But
I am. Well, it started to rain and snow. They were getting uncomfortable outside.
Well, they brought law enforcement. Casper came in.
It was like three different counties.
Riverton, Lander. We had. Yeah. There was another city that came in, and it was SWATs and sheriff's departments and highway patrol and our RPD. And
right. So I'm a guy that hasn't paid my taxes in a while, and they put me in the criminal investigation division, and they try to serve a no-knock warrant. The locks on my doors are for their benefit, not mine.
Well, and this has happened. I mean, there's instances of this kind of stuff. I mean, and it was, I want to say it was about 5 years ago, and I'd have to look it up to get all the details. But basically, what happened was they served a no-knock warrant on the wrong house.
Oh, God.
It was supposed to be like a neighbor's house on the next block. And it would have been a legit warrant, but they got the wrong address. They break into this guy's house in the middle of the night, and he smoked two officers. And when they finally got done with all the trials and everything, they're like, no, this was a legit self-defense. He was in the right.
And they owe him lots and lots of money because they invaded his calm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe they can get his neighbor to pay him the money, and then they'll all be equal.
Yeah, I don't know what cartel he was working for, but...
Yikes. No, and then you got to train for this kind of stuff, and you can't take it lightly. These folks out there that are going to try and do the no-knock warrants, are they ready? I mean, IRS training mode, are they ready?
Well,
And I really don't feel that... evading taxes, not paying your taxes, warrants a SWAT team to go in and blow shit up.
No,
I agree with you.
No, completely. It doesn't. And we did a whole podcast on the training that the IRS was doing. And if you listen to our intro, when you're talking about 2 weeks for all this, that's not training. That's camp.
I thought that was ATF training.
Yeah. Well, no, it might have been ATF.
All authorized underneath Title 26,
which is IRS.
That's right. So again, my point being is there's no way in hell that training is legit. For the time that they're going to spend at it, for what they're asked to go and do. They're and ask anybody.
Collecting your taxes, okay, again, not a SWAT team warrant.
Agreed.
Well, and I've always asked this question, all right? What good, it's the whole you can't get blood out of a turnip kind of thing. you didn't pay your taxes, so we're going to throw you in jail, so you still can't pay your taxes.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. But if you ask anybody that's gone and kicked in doors in the sandbox underneath the green machine, and the training that they go through to be able to go and do that and survive it.
I know. They expect a survival rate. That's why they get training.
Well, exactly right.
And they don't let those guys do it for very long before they rotate them into another MOS because they're like, there's a life expectancy here.
That's right. And it's a high-stress, high-training environment. That's all they do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These guys are pushing paper for the most part. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And they are not getting trained to go kick indoors.
And the Tier 1 guys will, like, if they know they're going to go hit a building, you know, think about the Osama bin Laden raid, right? They built a mock building, and they rehearsed that entry probably 100-150 times before they did it for real.
And these guys do this every day, all day. It's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about paper pushers. These guys are hardened, go and do.
Yep.
The IRS agents are not.
No.
So back to needing guns. I think we're doing them a favor.
Yeah.
Saving their life by taking this out of their environment.
And again, tax money is not a SWAT team situation. I'm sorry, you don't go in and blow shit up because someone owes you $600.
Agreed. I totally agree.
I mean, they may owe you more than that. I mean, there's money out there that's probably owed really large sums.
Well, and
but you don't shoot people for money.
I know. And
it's robbery.
And you want to talk about hypocrisy. when they started doing audits of the IRS and they found like 40% of the IRS agents owed back taxes.
Right. This whole thing needs to get prosecuted and go forward. They need their firearms taken from them like a bunch of toddlers.
Yes.
This is not good for society. No.
No. So hopefully I don't have high hopes for this, but at least it's being acknowledged on a federal level that...
I don't know. If Harriet's involved, she's going to see it through.
God, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. But I don't have faith in the Senate.
No, that's valid. That's valid.
It might make it through the House, but I just don't have the faith in the Senate. So, I don't know. We'll see what we see. But we have actually gone, like, long.
Then sum it up.
Well, I'm going to sum it up with this. The government shenanigans are just, it's almost fun to watch at this point. But, so, the weekend's coming up. It is Thursday. And like I said, we're in Atlanta. We're at NRA. So, if you're there, come find us. We never get to talk to our listeners.
We should, next time, maybe at the NRA, get a booth and do a live cast from the show.
We should. That would be a lot of fun.
It would be.
Because the people that we could pull in and talk to on something like that would be a ball.
Standing room only. I think the list would be big.
All right. So until next week, keep blaming the IRS?
Definitely.
Valid.
Done.